ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Canto 10, Chapter 52, Text 42.
Antapura, Antara, Charim, Anihatya, Bandhun, Twam, Ad Udvahe, कथम इति प्रवदामि उपायम् पूर्वेद्यु महति कुला देव यात्रा यस्याम् बहि नव वधुः गिरिजाम् उपेयात् अन्तःपुरान्तरचरीम् अनिहत्य बन्धुन् त्वाम् उद्वहे कथम् इति तद्वयामि उपयाम् पूर्वेद्युरष्टि महती कुलदेवयात्रा यस्याम् बहिर्नववधूर्गिरिजामुपेयात् अन्तःपुरान्तरचरीम् अनिहत्य बन्धुन् त्वाम् उद्वहे कथमिति प्रवदामि उपायम् पूर्वेद्युरस्ति महती कुलदेवयात्रा यस्याम् बहिर्नववधूर्गिरिजामुपेयात् अन्तःपुरान्तरचरीम् अनिहत्य बन्धुन् त्वाम् उद्वहे कथमिति प्रवदामि उपायाम् पूर्वेद्युरस्ति महती कुलदेवयात्रा यस्याम् बहिर्नववधूर्गिरिजामुपेयात् बन्धुन् राम उद्वहे कथमिति प्रवदामि उपायाम् पूर्वेद्युरस्ति महती कुलदेवयात्रा यस्याम् बहिर्नववधूर्गिरिजामुपेयात् अन्तःपुरान्तरचरीम् अनिहत्य बन्धून् त्वाम् उद्वहे कथमिति प्रवदामि पायाम् पूर्वेद्युरस्ति महती कुलदेवयात्रा यस्याम् बहिर्नववधूर्गिरिजामुपेयात्
Ladies,
antah purantara chari mani hatya bandhun, tvam udvahe kathamiti purvadami upayam, purvedyurasti mahati kuladeva yatra. यस्याम् बहिर्नववधूर्गिरिजामुपेयात्
अन्तःपुरा द विमेन्स् क्वार्टर्स् ऑफ द पैलेस् अन्तर विदिन् चरीम् मूविंग् अनिहत्या विदाउट किलिंग् बन्धून् योर रिलेटिव्स् त्वाम् यू उद्वहे आई शैल कैरी अवे कथम् How? Iti, saying such words, pravadami, I shall explain, upayam, a means, purvedhyu, on the day before, asti, there is, mahati, large, kula, of the royal family, deva, for the presiding deity, yatra, a ceremonial procession, yasyam, in which, bahi, outside, nava, new, vadhu, the bride, girijam, god Girija, goddess Girija, ambika, upeyat, approaches. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a royal procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit goddess Girija. Purport. Clever Rukmini anticipated a possible objection on the part of Sri Krishna. He certainly would not object to subduing rascals like Shishupal and Jarasandha, but he might be reluctant to injure or kill Rukmini's relatives, some of whom might block his way to the palace's inner sanctum, where the women are protected. The procession to or from the temple of Girija Durga would provide the perfect opportunity for Krishna to kidnap Rukmini without harming her relatives.
Om Agyana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanto Radha Kanto Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalapatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there's a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit goddess Girija. It is beautiful to see how Mother Rukmini is conceiving this very, very beautiful plan. She has figured out everything, all the details required for this operation of kidnapping her. So that's why the word used is clever. It's clever Rukmini. That she is not just sentimentally attached to Krishna and then say, you figure it out, you know, it's your problem, I belong to you now, you just do the needful. When you conceive of a plan in Krishna consciousness, it is not that we have to think about details of how to work it out. One has to be clever. A devotee is a clever person. In fact, a devotee is not just clever, but he is called as daksha. He is adept in doing whatever is required in the path of devotional service. The sense of intelligence, organization, determination. We can remember at this point how one day Prabhupada was in the middle of the night in Vrindavan, and then suddenly he called for Giriraj Swami, and it was way into the night, and then Prabhupada and then Giriraj Swami came to Prabhupada, said, "Prabhupada, yes, how can I serve you?" I said, "Giriraj, how will the movement continue?" So he said, "Prabhupada, by your grace, the books are there, the devotees are there, the temples are there, your example," like that. He gave what appeared to be the most important reasons why the movement could continue in the future. And that was all true. Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said two words, intelligence and organization. Right? Two words he said. So, that is intelligence. So Rukmini also here is very intelligent. A great duty of the Lord is having this special thing, intelligence. How to really work out Krishna's plan in this world? Krishna has a plan. The Acharyas have a plan. Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu have a plan. They all have a plan. We don't have a plan, but they have a plan. They have a plan, and the plan is very clear. It's an open secret that they want to flood the world with Krishna consciousness. And flood the world and take as many people in this large net that they are thrown into this ocean of this world. As many fish can be caught, like that. Those who are fed up of this fish of the material existence, the ocean of material existence can be salvaged and taken back to this kingdom of God. So their plan is very, very clear. But how to really execute that plan? That is something with the acharyas and the great souls, the uttam adhikaris. It is left to their individualistic thinking, individualistic understanding and approach, and their intelligence, how to really execute that. And they conceive it, they plan it, they describe it, and their followers take it from there and then take it further. So that's the way how the parampara really works. That's how the whole thing happens from top to down, how the message gets disseminated down the line and percolates deep into the societies, towns and villages of the world. Right? So Prabhupada was very clear. Prabhupada was extremely clever in this regard. Right? He knew how to really do things. Prabhupada's cleverness is so a wonderful topic to think and discuss about. How clever he was. Mr. Nair, he was demonically against Prabhupada's, and Prabhupada had this plot of land which he wanted to build Radharas Bihari temple there. And this Nair was a very, very demoniac person who was trying to cheat Prabhupada of lakhs and lakhs of rupees at that time in the 70s, and today it would have meant multiple of crores of rupees. And Prabhupada was going to be a fighter here. So Prabhupada had called for a meeting with Mr. Nair, because he wanted to discuss some details of the actual deal, which was, you know, stuck somewhere. So then this Mr. Nair figured out that Prabhupada is a very powerful person. So I have to get an equally powerful fellow with me to sort of prevent Prabhupada's tricks, mind control tricks. He may be having hypnotic spells he may put upon me or whatever. So he took a very powerful mystic along with him, who was just supposed to be there and monitor the exchange of subtle energies which are taking place there. So he was going to monitor all that. So Prabhupada, you know, he was very kind to him and very like that, and said they had nice prasad, and everyone was fed nicely, and said, "So you must be tired now, right? You may take some rest in the next room, and then we can discuss after you take rest." So then it was agreed, okay, it's very courteous of Prabhupada to think like that we can discuss, but, you know, it's not urgent, just take some rest. So Mystic Yogi went and slept. Mr. Nair went and slept. He went and slept in the next chamber. And Prabhupada told, I don't know who was there, maybe Tamarkrishna Maharaj, whoever was there, he said, "Go and wake up Mr. Nair. Don't wake up the mystic." So mystic was slumbering away, snoring away into his mystic slumber. Prabhupada called Mr. Nair and started discussing what was necessary, and you know, made the things happen while the mystic yogi was, you know, in a different realm. Right? Prabhupada was very clever. Very, very clever. He knew how to, he was a man who knew the one side of the transcendental abode of Krishna, and he exactly knew the dealings of this world also, both in one. He was not a, what they call in this world as naive, or sometimes a nincompoop. He wasn't anything of that. He was extremely sharp, extremely clever. When he was negotiating the Fisher Mansion at Detroit, very clever. Sir, we are beggars, Baba. No, he was trying to buy a big mansion, huge mansion, which had, you know, handles of gold and taps of gold. The flooring carpet was like millions of rupees and like that. You know, it's all chandeliers. Everything was gold. Fisher Mansion, very prominent. Some royal personality was staying there. And now it was, of course, open for sale. Prabhupada wanted that. Prabhupada wanted that. Not for himself. He was happy with Radha Damodar Mandir temple. In a small room he was staying, 10 by 10 square feet. He wanted it for Krishna, the best things. But how to negotiate a big deal like that? You know, and then some price was quoted, I don't remember, about $400,000 or something like that. Prabhupada said, okay, I will give $100,000. He quoted just rock bottom 10, you know, 1/4 the price. They said, so Dalal, who was there next, they said, hey, we didn't agree on this price, come on. This is not the price which we wanted to. So see, I am a fakir, you know. I'm a beggar. You are beggars, you know. Krishna is great. Prabhupada said, and he somehow made the deal in such a way, he spoke such words that fellow ultimately, you know, sort of melted away and said, okay, Swamiji, you take it for the price he was offering. So in this way, Prabhupada was very clever, very sharp person. Nobody could cheat him. How to fight lawsuits, powerful lawsuits, American lawsuits, 1976. Huge deprogramming was a big blemish on our movement, and it threatened almost its existence in America. And Prabhupada was very, very clear that if this court case is lost by ISKCON, then we lose our roots itself in America, which was the motherland of ISKCON. ISKCON was born in New York. It started sort of, you know, it was conceived in India but born there, like that. No, like a lady may get pregnant in India but may deliver in some other country, right? So ISKCON was conceived by Prabhupada in India, but it was delivered, the baby was born in New York. But it was a very dangerous situation. Prabhupada was very clear. Rameshwar Maharaj was there and other people. Prabhupada was programming them first. they were trying to deprogram, but Prabhupada had to program first our devotees. How to really get this court case going and fight with the American law? You know, America is not like some, you can just bribe somebody and, you know, get the things done. It was a very serious situation. Prabhupada won the case. And when he won the case, Prabhupada, then he said, now, this moment is here to stay. He made that proclamation, you know. Now, nobody can uproot this moment from this world. Because it is going to stay here for for hundreds of years to come. Prabhupada was very, very clever. So, this is how even Rukmini Devi is. She's in a female body. But, you know, we may think, oh, women are less intelligent and blah, blah, and all that stuff, right? But it's not true. When it comes to Krishna consciousness, the women or the men, Krishna gives them intelligence. As they say in this English language, where there's a will, there's a way, right? So there's a will. Rukmini Devi has a clear-cut will, a determined will, that I want to marry the most beautiful person, that is Krishna. And she's not just going to stop at that. She's going to figure out all the necessary microscopic details, which is communicating in this letter. I said, how to really get this done? And now she is telling him the plan, that I will be coming out in the open. You don't want to kidnap me from right inside. I'll come in the open and I'll be sort of, you know, unprotected in that sense, because it's just my female attendants will be around me. Because, you know, when the queen goes or the princess goes, it's not that, well, the women go along with them, right? It's not that the men go around, women go. And she will be less protected. There's a time you can come and kidnap me. Right? So the basis of Rukmini Devi's this great, almost I can say, adventure which she wants to get into is based on Rukmini Devi's immense attraction for Krishna's beauty and his qualities. She says this in the beginning, that I'm attracted intensely towards your beauty and to your divine qualities. So that's what is the driving force in Rukmini Devi's heart, that she's deeply attracted to Krishna's beauty. And why not? And why not? That's the question. After all, Krishna is the most beautiful person, right? Now we also have, all of us in this world, whether we are brahmacharis, grihasthas, these, that, anybody, village man, city man, metropolis, this, that, America, New York, Japan, wherever, everyone has an eye for beauty, is it not? No matter what rank of society we come in, from what, whether child or adult, man, woman, any background, we all have intrinsically within us built an eye for beauty. No one is attracted to ugly things. No one has an eye for ugly things. Oh, this is very ugly. We are attracted to beauty, to beautiful things. A child is attracted to a beautiful toy. Ah, beautiful. You don't see a colorful toy which moves around and makes some sound. Ah, it's attracted. You want to catch it. So we all have an eye for beauty. The whole department in this world, one of the biggest businesses in this world, among many other businesses, is the business of tourism. Right? And the whole tourism department of all the countries of the world is based on the perception of a person's desire for enjoying beauty. Right? He goes to Kerala or Switzerland or Niagara Falls or this and that. Wherever he goes in the world, they show all these pictures, all landscapes and mountains and greenery and trees and boating, blah, 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 blah. All that. Oh, go here, come here, come here. Malaysia, come Mauritius, come here. Oh, the ocean beach, green colored waters, blue waters. You go to Mauritius like that, it's beautiful. You know, we see our water also, Arabian Sea. Don't get so attracted, hardly anyone goes there. We just come from Grand Road Station, take a right turn, come here, see Krishna, and then you go. Hardly anyone goes to the beach. But the whole world comes to Mauritius to see the beach. Oh, blue colored water. And as you go into the waters, you find shades of blue. And the bank of the shore, there will be different color, turquoise blue and what they call different colors. Different blue shade will come. Sea green, blue green, sea blue, all sorts of variety of colors. So like that, everyone has eye for beauty. Very natural. Very natural for everyone's mind and soul to get attracted to beautiful things, beautiful people. A handsome young man, beautiful young lady, a nice object, a nice building, gardens, attraction. The question is, where does beauty come from? What is the ugam sthan of this beauty? Where does it come from? This is a scientific brain. A scientific brain is a brain which tries to figure out the source of everything. The biggest sense of all is, what is the source of creation? Where does all this stuff come from? This huge universe we are seeing outside, this galaxies and all, such expansive world, where does it come from? Now, they may have their theories, Big Bang, all that stuff. But the quest is to know, where do these things come from? That's a science, scientific person. The Ganga is flowing. Ganga is flowing from the mountains, the Himalayas. Figure out, where is this water coming from? So they go up, 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 up. Trace it, trace it, trace it. Oh, it comes from Gangotri. Oh, no, not Gangotri. Go up, 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 up. Gomukh. After Gomukh, you don't see any source of the Gomukh. There's a max you can go backward. So no, but there where the material sense perception stops, the spiritualists take over. So no, it doesn't come from the Gomukh. You are wrong, you are wrong. She comes from the heavenly planets, my dear. Really? Oh, it's explained. She comes from heavenly planets, comes on the earth, and doesn't stop at the earth. She flows down again, Ganga Sagar, and she goes down. Bhagavati, she goes down in the lower planets. But again, the spiritualists say, no. It is not coming from the heavenly planets. That is just, she's flowing there, but she doesn't come from there. Where does she come from? Oh, she comes from the causal ocean. Oh, really? Causal ocean. That's still tracing it to its source. Causal ocean has gone. No, actually not causal ocean. It is actually the water which has been bathing the lotus feet of Vamanadev. Oh, really? Okay. So how did it come inside, this water? So said Vamandev, he expanded his size to the size of the universe. So now we have to figure out something, you know, we have to expand our frog-like brains now. Okay, Vamandev, as big as this universe, not as big as this planet, but as big as the universe, and then his lotus feet, now the lotus feet is like a huge lotus, you know, and that lotus feet is cracking the coverings of the universe. And Brahma from the Satya Loka is now, from his Kamandalu, washing. Oh, the lotus feet has now come to Satya Loka. You can see that Satya Loka is now brilliant by the toenails of the effulgence of Vamanadev, and he is going to bathe it now. But in the process, Vamanadev happened to crack the universe, and 3 drops came from the causal ocean. He's just outside the universe. The universe is floating. Probably like a football floats on the, you know, on the ocean. Football, you put a million footballs in the ocean. How will they look like, right? So all the oceans are floating like that. Tuk, 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 bouncing in the causal ocean. Causal ocean is so huge. And there are all these footballs, you know, bouncing in there. And one football cracked from inside. And 3 drops of the ocean went inside. From outside they went inside. And that 3 drops is the entire Ganga flowing for millions and millions and millions of years. That's where the spiritual scientist ends. And wow, it comes from Vamanadev. Jai. Everything has to ultimately end at Krishna. Whether Ganga or anything else. It has to end, not end, let's say begin from. It doesn't end there, it begins from there. That is what the acharyas have been emphasizing again and again. The first sutra is Janmadi Asya Yataha. The spiritual scientist takes us way beyond sense perception, way beyond the reach of the sonar and the radar. Right? And take us to the ultimate source of all water, the causal ocean. Where does beauty come from? Rukmini is attracted intensely to Krishna's beauty. We talked about all this, various Kerala and Goa beach and all that, Mauritius and everything else. Oh, Krishna says, this is all beautiful things. Yes, very beautiful things. Oh, you look in, the monsoon, and then suddenly there is some sunshine is there, and on one side is raining, and then a little drizzle is there, and then there is sunshine. And you wait in the sky, very soon there will be a rainbow. And then you look at the rainbow. What a beautiful creation of nature. 7 colors, vibgyor. Oh, the rainbow lasts for half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours. It fades away. Beauty. Krishna says very clearly, my dear Arjun, yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjitam evava tat tat eva gachatvam mama tejomsha sambhavam. All this is just tejo amsha, my tej, and this is my, all the beauty of this world, all the beautiful men, the beautiful women, and all these rainbows, and all these greenery, and these mountains, and the snow-capped, you know, hills, everything which looks beautiful, it is not to be denied, there is beauty there, it may be temporary, but it is beautiful, no doubt, anyone can say it is beautiful, and there are millions of snaps taken by best of photographs, with best of lenses, you know, right? Because they are attracted to that, they want to capture that beauty into a solid film, and show this is beautiful, right? It is beautiful, but Krishna is saying, Mama Tejo Amsha. People have not seen the beauties of the heavenly worlds. Oh, now you go beyond. This is not so beautiful. You go to the valleys and all, you saw it, nice, nice. You go to the heavenly planets. How beautiful they are. Demigods. Demigods, they also have their picnics. They also have their outings. Where they enjoy. They don't come to the material world, to Kerala. They don't come to Gorai Beach. to enjoy their picnics. They have got beautiful places over there. Alkapuri and Nandanan gardens are there. Most beautiful. We can't imagine what corals and rubies. Now we have in this world, you know, we have to decorate for a marriage party. Then there's a tree. And then for you to put colored bulbs there on the tree. And the tree looks colored. You know, blue, green, and then they keep on twing, 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 twing like that. You put some motor there, twing, 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 and it goes on twing, twing like that. Of course, we use some of those techniques here in Shradh Purnima to purify Krishna's pastimes. But there in the trees, in the heavenly worlds, they're naturally luminous. There are no bulbs, there are no electric currents there, no wires, you know, from Indra's court, you know, all. Indra's got a big electric power house, all the plugs are there and all the, everything is beautified from it. Everything is naturally beautiful. The roads, the pavements, naturally beautiful. Intoxicating, and the aromatic air. Air is fragrant. No bad smell, no dustbins, open dustbins, nothing. All this from the heavenly worlds. And all beautiful apsaras are there. But apsaras, however beautiful they may be to our rishis and sages and to all of us, they are supposed to be insignificant beauty as compared to Parvati Devi. The Parvati Devi is exceedingly beautiful. And how many demons coveted her? Bhasmasura and so many, they coveted her because she's so charming and beautiful. And yet, with that unlimited charming beauty, millions of times more than the apsaras, she fades away in beauty when compared to the Lakshmis in the Vaikuntha planets. She fades. She doesn't compare in her beauty. That's how beautiful the queens of Vaikuntha Loka are. And these Vaikuntha queens are supposed to be, now we know, we are getting a frog in the well beauty understanding. We cannot go beyond, you know, we cannot understand. For us, you know, these ordinary girls, you know, they agitate our minds, you know, because our level of beauty appreciation is so shallow, so insignificant, so superficial. We don't understand of beauty at all, practically. So something just stupid, you know, stupidly beautiful attracts us. We don't know what is real beauty. And then the gopis of Vrindavan, how much beautiful they are. Among all of them, Srimati Radharani. But she ultimately is Shakti. If Radharani is so beautiful, but she is Shakti, Ladini Shakti. Who is the source of Srimati Radharani? The Shaktiman. How beautiful must be Krishna? Who can even ever imagine? We can't imagine Apsara's beauty also. What is Krishna's beauty? Transcendentally beautiful personality. His toenails, his hair, his teeth and his lips. The bends of his body and his smile. And what to talk of his eyes. That is the beauty which you and I have been searching for millions of lifetimes. And having not known, having not been blessed, having been randomly wandering like a gypsy in this world, we have become so dirty, becoming attracted to this so-called beauty of this world. And in finding the real beauty of this, the real beauty which we are looking for, we have been going after lifetimes and lifetimes, looking for beautiful things. You get attracted to something and you again come back to fulfill the desire. You get attracted to some desire and then the desire brings you back to this world. And again attracted to something and you get back to this world. You go on this pursuit of beauty to attract, makes us go on in the sojourn of this world, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And Madan plays his tricks in all our minds, and how we get enamored, how we get so enamored by these things. And when we talk of Krishna's beauty, it's not even Krishna; it is Naranarayan Rishi. It's an expansion. Sitting at the Badrinath, you know the story, how Indradev came with all his Kamadev and all these forces. See, this is important. Why? Because Prabhupada is saying here, the devotee's life, what is a devotee's life? What is the content of a devotee's life? The content of a devotee's life is simply trying to understand Krishna. A materialist trying to understand material nature and how to use it, exploit it, gain it, gain victory over it, and then have it and amass it and enjoy it. Therefore, he has to amass it, to control it, he has to understand it first. Right? But Krishna's devotees, their endless mental faculties are directed, focused towards understanding the beauty and the glory and the qualities of the all-beautiful Krishna. And that's Srimad Bhagavatam class, that's Srimad Bhagavatam literature, that's the Puranas, that's Bhagavad Gita. It's simply trying to understand Krishna. There is no other purpose in a devotee's life. There's no other purpose to any scripture ever written in the world than to understand Krishna. Vedesa sarve aham eva vedyo. The only singular purpose of any scripture ever written by Vyasadeva, or for that any sage or any rishi, is only one. Remember, there are so many topics covered. How to fight wars, how to make temples, and so many things may be there. But the actual purpose, the actual intrinsic purpose, is to simply understand Krishna. And if we miss that point, all scriptural study is in vain. Is Srameva Hi Kevalam. If we miss the point that we do not use scriptures which we have got by Prabhupada's grace, Krishna's grace, to understand Krishna, then all the study of scripture is simply a vain waste of time, energy. Prabhupada was so eager to give the world Krishna in the form of Krishna book. He wanted to give the world an exposure to this all-beautiful person, Krishna. Therefore, at third canto, he stopped. I do not know. I've got paralysis, I've got kidney problem, I've got diabetes and heart attacks and so many things. This body may not even last till the 10th canto. He abruptly stopped. That's very significant. Why the author stopped and jumped 7 cantos. He was in a great hurry. The sense of urgency Prabhupada had. He didn't want to leave the planet before giving the planet the blessing of Krishna. His beauty and his qualities and his pastimes, which are all encapsulated in the 10th canto. He wanted to leave the world only after that. Otherwise, he would have thought himself as completely undone. A job incomplete. After he had given 44 chapters, what is that? 14 chapters, right? 14 chapters of the 10th canto. And then he reverted back, you know, to his basic other 4th, 5th, like that. And he had given the world a lot. He had given Krishna. He had given 14 chapters. Krishna's birth, Krishna's childhood pastimes. He had given a lot. And he would have given even more if Krishna wanted him. But Krishna had his plans. Because we are all, as George Harrison says very clearly, we are all looking only for Krishna. The beauty which we are looking for is not in a man or a woman or a car, or a mobile, or a flat, 5-bedroom or 10-bedroom. That's not what we're looking for. That's not solely looking for bedrooms. We're solely looking for Krishna. And therefore, once the soul has an experience of Krishna, it is only then and then alone that he will completely stop this endless futile journey looking for things of beauty in this world. Therefore, Rupa Goswami has told us that you just look at Krishna once, who is standing in three-bending form at Keshi Ghat. Once you see that form of Krishna at Keshi Ghat, then finished. You are materially dead. Your all desires are dead. We are born to relish the unending beauty of Krishna. So we want to search that Krishna in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Through meditation, to prayer, and through hearing, trace out the beauty of Krishna. That is what makes a soul actually beautiful. What makes a soul beautiful, see, when the rain falls from the sky, it hits the mountains. Mountains are filled with minerals. And the water takes along with it all the minerals. And when they're laden with minerals, manganese and copper and cobalt, so many valuable minerals, it goes into the plains and then rushes into the rivers. And wherever the river flows or the minerals flow, and they go and fertilize all the land required for luscious growth of beautiful trees and foliage. Right? Similarly, when the soul comes in contact with Krishna, just like the rainwater comes in contact with the mountains, the reservoir of all these minerals, the soul also comes in contact with Krishna and becomes imbued with Krishna's quality. He becomes actually beautiful. Prabhupada was a beautiful man. And if you want to know how beautiful he was, ask Shamsundar Prabhu, who was staying with him live, close by for a few years, and saw the delicacy and the intricacy and artistry of every movement. That was drinking a glass of water, or you know, breaking open a puri which is bloated up, or eating a banana, or chanting his rounds, or whatever. He was looking at Prabhupada with such an eye of beauty. And it is not just sentimental. Prabhupada had a beautiful smile. When we think of all the austerities of his disciples, whether it is the freezing cold of Siberia or Russia, or the hot summers of various places they were distributing Prabhupada's books, it was the only reward they had for all the intense tapasya which they did, was to see a smile on Prabhupada's face. That smile for them was non-different than Krishna smiling on their soul. That is the type of satisfaction that particular Vaishnava had when Prabhupada's smile was genuine. It wasn't a plastic smile of air hostesses and actresses. It was coming from his heart. When Prabhupada was pleased, he would smile. When he would smile, that smile was coming from Krishna, who was also simultaneously pleased with that particular devotee's endeavor. Prabhupada's smile was actually beautiful. It was spiritually beautiful. It wasn't the beauty of what the camera can see, but what the soul can perceive. Prabhupada was a beautiful person, right? Because he was in touch with Krishna. Anyone comes in contact with Krishna becomes beautiful. Kubja was a very ugly lady. Nobody would look at her for the second time. She was all bent in various ways, and the way she would have been walking was like, with all her, bent spine, all that stuff. How can a person like that be beautiful? You look at her and say, ugly. But her soul became beautiful that particular moment when she touched Krishna's beautiful body with the chandan in her hands, and she applied chandan on his face, on his limbs, hands, legs, various places. And the moment she did that, her soul sort of brightened into beauty. And Krishna wanted to prove how beautiful she had become and for the world to see. And Krishna touched her. She had touched Krishna, but now Krishna touched her. And then straightened her up. And she became like the goddess of fortune. Beautiful. The hippies of this world were dirty people. Dirty. No bathing, alcoholism, drugs, lying on the bums on the side of the road, dirty people, smelly, untouchables they had become. But they came in contact with the most beautiful person, that is Prabhupada. And through Prabhupada, through Krishna's holy name, and through Krishna's prasadam and his philosophy, and how they changed from ugly looking dirty people, which everyone abhorred to look at. Nobody would go to the streets. There's no beauty there. It's all dirt and bats odor in every street practically. But the moment they touched Krishna and Prabhupada and the holy name and Krishna's philosophy, they blossomed. And the men became so beautiful. The seven heads, saffron or white. The women became so beautiful with saris, necklaces, red mark in their hair, between the hair, parting. They become beautiful people. The natural beauty was awakened. So, Krishna is all beautiful, and a person in this world becomes beautiful only when he comes in contact with that all beautiful person. Because his soul becomes beautiful. He shines because of the power of his character. Shines because of his laden with Vaishnava qualities. The beauty actually of the soul is when it manifests Vaishnava qualities. They are just like a lady has ornaments for beautification. Similarly, the soul, when it cultivates, when the spirit soul, the devotee, cultivates various, through sadhana bhakti, various activities to beautify his conscience with the qualities of humility and love and surrender to Krishna, he becomes beautiful. And then even Krishna gets attracted to him. Why? Because he has been touched by the grace of Srimati Radharani. When Krishna gets attracted, he lifts his soul with his own hands, takes him to where everything in that realm is all beautiful. Every peacock, every grain of dust, every leaf there is unending, ever-increasing beauty. It's a realm of beautiful people, Golok Vrindavan. But everyone's soul is shining with love. Love for Radha and Krishna. And when you go to such a place, everything becomes completely beautiful. That's why devotees are so beautiful. They are very beautiful people. Very attractive. But they shine with Krishna's beauty. So let us make our endeavor to go deeper and deeper in our discussions, in our readings, in our meditations, to unravel, unfold, and excavate from this huge mine of Krishna's divine qualities, his guna and his rupa. Through the holy name, we can access Krishna's beauty. Through the holy name, we can access Krishna's qualities. And we want to become unsatiated in hearing that. The way Parikshit Maharaj is getting, is unsatiated. He is not satisfied. He is drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking for 7 days. How much can a person drink? But his soul is ever increasingly thirsty, drinking Krishna's qualities, drinking Krishna's beauty, the beauty of his pastimes. We have that treasure by Prabhupada's grace. We have to allow our minds to get distracted, unattracted, from all the other so-called attractions of this world, and just focus with this one-pointed consciousness, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ekya Kuru Nandana, to understand Krishna's beauty. All this analysis of apsaras and all is to make us understand how beautiful Krishna must be. Because Krishna can only be understood by some comparison. Because we don't have Krishna's absolute understanding. We compare him to a cloud, compare him to an apsara, compare him to a nice flower, or the moon, something of this world, which we can see. Oh, if the moon is beautiful, the flower is beautiful, the peacock is beautiful, what is Krishna? Like that. Because we have only such a limited range of comparison. Just have the clouds. It's Ghanashyam. So in this way, we have to allow our minds to go deeper and deeper to this understanding. And then we can see that Mother Rukmini is saying that, you are so beautiful, my dear Krishna. If I don't get you, I'm willing to perform endless tapasya for millions of years. And that may one day attract your grace. And one day I'll be able to have your holy darshan. That's the type of energy she also put behind obtaining and attaining Krishna. How much energy are we putting in our spiritual lives to attain Krishna? It is not as much as it should be. So let us make a deeper endeavor to understand some beauty is here in front of our eyes as Radha and Gopinath, Radha Rashama Sundar, Radha Madhava. We have some glimpse of that beauty when the pujaris decorate their forms with love, with flowers and nice dresses. We have some glimpse of that beauty. But the real beauty, We'll end with a small story. Ramoyacharya was walking. You know the small story. This, what is this boy, devotee's name? Dandavardhara Das. Is attracted to the eyes of this young lady. So attracted to the eyes of the young lady. He was mesmerized by the eyes of this lady. And in the whole world looking towards Ranganath Swami going on the palki, she looking at this lady. He cannot draw her eyes, his eyes off. He was captivated. Ramacharya felt it was a very, very strange. The whole world looking at the Utsav Murti of Ranganath Swami. And this man is, and he felt compassion. He felt love. So I must give him a taste of what beauty actually is. Right? To the Ranganath temple and said, you want to see something beautiful? If I show something beautiful, will you give up this beauty? He made a deal with him. I said, oh yeah, yeah. If I want to, I don't think there's anything actually any more beautiful than this girl's, this lady's eyes. But if you tell me something more beautiful, I'll give her up in higher taste. Param Drishtva. So he wanted to give him a real higher taste. He stuck to Ranganath Swami's temple. Now so many people go to Ranganath Swami's temple. We have gone, all of us have also gone a couple times. And we have seen those eyes. Sorry to say, I did not feel the same way which this devotee must have felt. So look at these eyes. Like Krishna gave Arjun divine eyes to see. So Sri Ramacharya, Sripada Ramacharya gave divine eyes first to so able to see the real beauty of Krishna. When he saw Ranganath Swami's eyes, it's finished. Each and every limb of Krishna has got unlimited beauty. Unlimited. The nail. Unlimited beauty in the nail. How can there be unlimited beauty in a nail? Now, girls have to put so much of these dyes these days. There are nail, what do you call, nail parlors. They keep on putting various things on their nails to make them appear beautiful. Krishna's nail is unlimitedly beautiful. His eyes are unlimitedly beautiful. His hair unlimitedly beautiful. How can hair be unlimitedly beautiful? That is Krishna. It's inconceivable. When he saw the eyes, he was finished. He said, this is it. My search ends here. There's nothing which can ever be more beautiful than this. And he became a devout, madly attracted devotee to Ranganath Swami's beauty. Gopinath is here. Premanjana Churita. When we get this, that Premanjana from the spiritual master, we'll also be able to appreciate the beauty of Radha and Gopinath. Let that be the singular desire which governs our life all throughout. To be attracted to see Krishna. When can I see you? When can I be with you? Let there be the hankering of our souls through our journey in spiritual life. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? It's a little late now, but we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Ready.